Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Congratulations, you've managed to make it to the middle of the week, but that's where the good news stops because it is still, I'm sorry to say, it is still the international break. But never fear, because here at FSD, we have got you covered. As despite no actual Premier League football taking place until next weekend, we'll be taking a little look at some of the breaking stories involving Premier League clubs so that you are kept right up to date. Yes, we are indeed. So, in part one, we're looking at Fergie's meddling at Manchester United. The United icon has had a few words of, let's say, advice, helpful advice for Ollie over his handling of Cristiano Ronaldo. We're going to be talking about that in just a second. Part two is all about Spurs. Nuno Santos' difficult start to life at the club could be made a little bit harder after a leak has emerged this week over the details of his contract in North London. And then in part three, we will be taking a look at the latest picture surrounding COVID-19 and players returning from the international break next week. Right then, my name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me today we have Mr. Ian Brannan. Ian, how's things?
Yeah, good, thank you. All good, full of the Wednesday midweek fun and frolics. It's the best part of the week. All downhill from here.
Indeed, indeed. And on that positive note, the king of positivity, Mr. Marley Anderson. Marley, how are you doing?
Here's one miserable git. He's back again. It's me again. All right.
If it ends in day, Marley's in a bad mood. Right, Manchester United, Ian, we're going to go to you first on this. Sir Alex Ferguson, Cristiano Ronaldo and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We always knew when Ronaldo came back to United that Ferguson was going to have a continuing role. Obviously, he played a big role in bringing him back to Manchester United. He was the one that made the phone call. That obviously derailed City's potential move for him, and he did head back to Manchester United. He's been excellent on his return. Goals, performances, pretty much everything that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would have expected, but it was never going to go smoothly. And on Saturday, he opted to bench him for the draw against Everton. Lots of criticism. Solskjaer was grilled about it in his post-match press conference. And then just when you thought Ole's situation couldn't get any worse, his former boss has come out and questioned him. In a sentence I never really thought I'd say, a casual conversation after the game between Ferguson and, Marley, help me out here, UFC champion
Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Brilliant stuff. I don't want to get his name wrong because he looks quite frightening, so thanks
for
that.
You can just copy and paste
Fergie
that.
And Khabib. Fergie and Khabib were having a little chat after the game, and Ian, Fergie basically said, you play your strongest team, you play your best players, and when Everton saw that Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't in the starting lineup, it gave them a boost. This does not help Ole Gunnar Solskjaer one little bit.
No, well, as you say, first question is, what is Alex Ferguson doing talking to MMA fighters? Things that you never saw coming, but nonetheless, they bumped into each other in the director's lounge. Yes, everyone was confused about this. It's not like he's having a busy period of games in the Champions League and Premier League and, I don't know, the Papa John's trophy or whatever he's squeezing into his fixture list this week, because, of course, international break is here. And then he's benched. Unbelievable. And nobody was more disappointed than me, because he was my fantasy Premier League captain this week. So I was at the kids' swimming lesson, refreshing the app, going, "What? No points? What's going on? He's not even started."
Can I just ask, were you looking for MMA fighters at the swimming club to get this off your chest with?
There are none. There are absolutely okay. It is not an MMA kind of audience.
Ian's battered them all already.
It's swim academy and. Yeah, well, you know, if I but Amali will maybe appreciate this being being a man of the north. You know, the swimming lessons are happening in Heban, right on the banks of the Tyne. So, you know, you need a few of those skills to get yourself through there. But yeah, of course, it's going to give a boost to the opposition seeing that Cristiano Ronaldo's not starting. I don't think Alex Ferguson has actually said anything that we probably weren't all thinking. To be honest, he's got a point. Of course, if you're playing against Everton, it's not like we're playing against the bottom side in the table. Everton, you know, it's a big northwest derby. It's got a lot on it. You would expect Cristiano Ronaldo to have started that match. So yeah, I don't think that Fergie's speaking out of turn. I think he's saying what we're all thinking, and I think it's as you say, put pressure on Ole now, because yeah, he might be able to justify it once, but he's not going to get away with that very often.
Marley, what does this say about the power structures at Manchester United? And I mean, particularly surrounding the team. We know, as I mentioned before, Ferguson had a big role in bringing Ronaldo back. Ronaldo spoke before he came back, essentially saying that was a decisive factor, that the phone call that he had with Ferguson. Solskjaer is under pressure, and there's always been questions of Ferguson's role in the background. What sort of an influence is he having? Is he maybe exerting that influence over Solskjaer? Solskjaer has now brought in Ronaldo. He's having those same questions thrown at him regarding a player. It's coming at him from all sides. And his leadership and his ability to manage this situation is constantly being questioned. When we look at the structure and the power plays that are going on now at United, Ferguson is obviously still involved. We know that Ronaldo is already playing a leading role, despite the fact that he's not a coach, he's still just a player, although you could be forgiven for thinking different. Where does this leave Solskjaer in terms of how he still continues to command respect?
It's a tough situation because, You know, since Ronaldo's came in, it's just everything is Ronaldo. Like, you know, you win a game and, you know, he's not as... Yeah, it's all about him, you know, the Villarreal win. It's all about how he rescued you. They draw with Everton. It's all about how he was benched. And then this, like, fleeting conversation between Alex Ferguson, a 80-year-old man, and a man he doesn't know, who Khabib... You know, he doesn't know Khabib at all. He even asked Khabib...
He had that chat with Usain Bolt the week before
it's just,
as well.
It's,
I don't know who's coming next week. I can't wait.
I don't know, Jimmy Cranky next week or something. It's bizarre. It's really strange.
Duncan Goodyear.
But it's weird, like, you know, like, Ferguson doesn't know Khabib at all. He asked him if he was... When's his next fight? And he's been retired for 18 months. So it was like... I don't know why he said this, but then... It all comes back to everything's about Ronaldo. Like, you can't do anything now at Man United without the tabloids running away with things and saying, was this the right thing to do? Should he have been benched? And if he'd have started and not done anything, it would have been, should he have been rested because he's 36 and he's not meant to play two games a week, he's not used to it. It'd be the pace in Italy's slower and all these cliches and old chestnuts will come out again. So I almost think, is it worth having Ronaldo, because everything's so Ronaldo focused now at Man United that nothing Solskjaer can, in my opinion, nothing he can do can win him back the credit that he might deserve. Like, if he puts on a tactical masterclass and beats Man City 4-0 in the first Manchester derby of the season, it'll be Ronaldo inspires Man United to derby day victory. It's nothing he can do will get the credit anymore. And we've seen something similar with Juventus, and eventually people were saying, like, are Juventus better off without Ronaldo because of all this media pressure and things like that? And it gets to a point where that is a genuine point, and we're nowhere near the end of it at Man United. It's only just starting. He's only played 6 or 7 games, so I think we've got a long way to go in this. And ultimately, I think Solskjaer's job will become untenable, because you can't ever get the plaudits you may get without him, so to speak.
Yeah, it was just such a strange setup. It kind of reminded me of, like, you know, a really awkward Christmas chat between a granddad yeah. and a kind of gym MMA obsessed cousin. You know at Christmas where you're trying to act like a normal person and just eat your body weight in turkey and Quality Street, and there's always a random cousin there who looks like he could just unscrew someone's head. That's what it looked like to me. It looked like that weird chat between the granddad asking him, how are you getting on with that boxing? It's not boxing, it's MMA, and I'm not doing it anymore. Oh, well, good luck with it. Except it was Sir Alex Ferguson and Khabib. It was just very, 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 very surreal. Back to, the issue at hand, Ian and Solskjaer and Ronaldo. Looking at the games that are coming up now for United, they're not in the League Cup anymore. They're knocked out by West Ham. FA Cup doesn't roll around until January when the third round gets underway. Realistically, this idea of resting Ronaldo now kind of goes out the window probably for the next 6 to 8 weeks, because you would expect him to play, or probably at least feature, maybe not start in every single one, but play in every Premier League or the massive majority of Premier League games and Champions League games. So Solskjaer's plans to manage him and pull him out of certain games to make sure that he gets that rest, given the run of games they've got after the international break, Leicester, Atalanta, Liverpool, Spurs, Atalanta again, and then City at the start of November, there isn't really a rest period for him now. And like it or not, Ronaldo is just going to have to play, and Solskjaer is just going to have to deal with it.
But Ronaldo wants to play, and you know, obviously wants to play. But as Marley said, this is a no-win situation, I think, for Ole. Mm. And I implore you, if you have the time and you can find it, sounds like a really bad alternative intro to the A-team, then you can go back to one of the episodes of this podcast from whenever it was that they signed Cristiano Ronaldo. And I said exactly this would happen. Call me Nostradamus. But I said that this is going to be a big problem for Ole, because he's going to have to manage Ronaldo's ego and the whole Ronaldo sideshow that goes with it. And this is exactly what's happening, and we're only in October. And he's going to have to, because it's not only managing him and the expectations of us and media and Alex Ferguson and whoever else wants to have their say, it's managing the expectations of the rest of the team. You know, don't forget, you've got a team of other egos in there as well, who think that they're probably better than Ronaldo, because in their eyes, Ronaldo's at the back end of his career. He's a has-been. He's been there and done it, and yeah, he's still got it, but, you know, his best days are firmly behind him. You can't argue with that. So, you know, Bruno Fernandes and, Rashford, or whoever else they've got in the team there, probably see themselves as being ideally ahead of Ronaldo on their day. So is he trying to balance all of the egos there by benching Ronaldo, but then creating he can't win. He's going to annoy somebody every week, and it's an absolute nightmare. And what's going to happen is the whole Ronaldo show is going to become bigger than the club. And we saw him, I think the biggest thing was him walking off, wasn't it, muttering to himself. To be fair, really bad form, poor sportsmanship. You know, he had Andros Townsend went up to sort of congratulate him or thank him or whatever, and he just ignored him and walked past him straight down the tunnel. You just think, come on. You know, it's like you got a draw against Everton, and you know it's not the worst thing in the world. And I don't know. It's just a problem. It's a problem to manage. And as Marley was saying, yeah. But back to your question about, yeah, he's going to have to play. He is going to have to play to justify his place in starting. You know, give him a few. But if he's not performing, he's going to have to be benched on merit. You know, so that's the thing. Solskjaer needs to be strong enough to know when he's not strong as well, and not be feel forced to play him if he feels, because obviously he sees him more than we do in training. If you know, Ronaldo's been chilling on the sidelines thinking he's just going to walk in at the team every week, then that's not the way either. Did that make any sense? I went on a proper tangent there. Completely forgot what the question was.
Not a problem, don't worry. These things happen. Marley, Ronaldo's under contract until the end of next season. Solskjaer's under contract until the end of 23-24. Obviously, Ronaldo has that option to extend for a further season. Who stays at Manchester United longer, Cristiano Ronaldo or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Oof, bloody hell. Good question, that. Solskjaer, for me. I think Ronaldo will do his 2 years and go back to Portugal and play for Sporting again. Solskjaer's got a contract, I think, till 2024, and recently they're building his backroom staff onto a contract at the same sort of time, aren't they? So, yeah, the logic would suggest it'd be Solskjaer, but I mean, anything can happen. I'm not sure where this balance comes when you're managing Ronaldo. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it go either way, but I would probably say Solskjaer.
Ian, would you agree that you think Solskjaer will outlast Ronaldo?
I don't know. I mean, it's a big investment from the Glazers, isn't it, Ronaldo? Because I know that there wasn't much in the way of a transfer fee, but I don't imagine that he's taken home the basic living wage either. You know, so I think there's huge investment, because you've got all the marketing stuff, like the shirts and sponsors and various other tie-ins. I can see Ronaldo outlasting Solskjaer, I've got to say.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1. I'm going to agree with Ian. I think the writing's on the wall for Solskjaer. Maybe not in the short term, but certainly in the medium term. And I cannot see anybody, even Alex Ferguson or Khabib, politely saying to Ronaldo, can you just leave? Because at the end of the day, he is Cristiano Ronaldo. Right, gents, we're going to call it there for part one of the show. Take a quick break. After the break, it is Spurs. Big talk over Nuno Santo and how long he will be staying at Tottenham. We're going to get stuck into that in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily. It is Wednesday and welcome to the middle of the week. Despite the international break, we are still here every single day with a daily Premier League podcast. If you click subscribe now on this one, you can get a brand new version as soon as it is ready. Right, Tottenham, Marley, going to go to you on this one. Big story emerging overnight from The Athletic surrounding Nuno Santo. It's not been the most exciting or the most thrilling start to life for Santo at Tottenham in terms of results. Those back-to-back 1-0 wins at the start of the season have kind of dissipated a little bit, and he's only won 2 in his last 6 in all competitions. And just when you think it couldn't get any worse, this story from The Athletic claims Santo signed a 2-year contract at Spurs this summer, but if he does not reach the top 6, if he doesn't qualify them for a minimum of the Europa League for next season, he can and probably will be sacked with no compensation. This story just demonstrates Nuno wasn't first choice. This is a marriage of convenience, and Tottenham probably will get rid of him at the first opportunity.
It's a weird one, isn't it? You feel like, you know, firstly with it coming from The Athletic, you think it's true. You're inclined to believe it. You know, they're usually spot on with their information. Secondly, it kind of makes sense, because with the Spurs chase for a manager that dragged on for, I think it was 9 weeks over the summer, you know, ultimately they wanted a manager on their terms. They wanted to not get burnt. We all know what Levy's like in terms of paying out compensation. Ideally, he doesn't want to do it. As all chairmen don't, but I think he's used that in these negotiations with Santo. You know, Santo's desperate to get that Spurs job. It was the best job he could possibly get coming out of the Wolves gig. So he had to probably take a little bit of, you know, take like a backward step in the negotiations and say, okay, well, this top 6 clause, I'll deliver, and if I don't deliver, then you can sack me without compensation. So It does make sense in terms of whether you believe it or not, and yeah, it's clear you've got to perform now with Santo, because he made a decent start. 3-1-0 wins papered over some cracks that were, you know, smashed open by Crystal Palace and then Arsenal a couple of weeks later. So, you know, it's time to he can't claim that he's you know, doesn't know what he's got to do. He's got it there in paper. If this is all legit and true, you know, he's got to finish top 6. It's probably the most high quality competitive Premier League there's ever been right now. So, you know, you've essentially got 2 spots to fight for, because we think that the top 4 is going to be the 2 Manchester clubs, Chelsea and Liverpool, and then you've got, you know, Leicester looking strong as well, or have done in previous years. They've finished 5th 2 years in a row, so You've got to nick that 6th spot ahead of Everton, Arsenal, and any other surprise packages. So, you know, it's not like you're in the dark about what you've got to do. You've got to do that, and if you don't do that, you risk the risk. You've got the risk of the axe falling on you.
Yeah, look, I'm looking at Tottenham's situation, Ian. They have finished top six and qualified for Europe for the last decade, 2010 right the way up to 2020, and that covers five managers. Every single one of them has at least got sixth or better, and that meant Europa League or Champions League. Last season was the only outlier with Jose Mourinho and then Ryan Mason to complete the campaign. So you can logically see how Tottenham are in a position to say to any prospective manager, this is par, this is where we expect you to be. But is this a telling position, as Marley said, that Nuno Santo wants to advance his career, he wants to make the next step from Wolves to a Spurs to maybe building on from there? He's had his arm twisted over this by Daniel Levy, but it does go back to this initial point that he wasn't first choice, and because of that, Tottenham know the power is in their hands. I don't think Daniel Levy would have sat down with Maurizio Pochettino and demanded that if he didn't get top six, he'd be sacked, or some of the other targets, Erik ten Hag and one or two others. This demonstrates that Nuno Santo is a good manager, but ultimately, deep down for Levy, for Spurs, they don't think he's good enough, but they need a placeholder.
Yeah, and we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I think, over the course of the season, the whole Nuno thing and how he wasn't the first choice and all that. And yeah, it's sort of confirmed with the details of this contract, isn't it? That if he fails to deliver a top six finish, he can be sacked, you know, halfway through his two-year deal without any compensation. Maybe Nuno feels confident he's going to do that top six and thinks it's, you know, a price worth paying in order to get a top job. But it's you know, the cards are definitely loaded in Spurs' favour there. And managers, I don't know, there's two ways of looking at it with managers' contracts that, you know, I've heard of managers that, you know, for them, the most important thing in the contract was the compensation, because they knew that inevitably they probably would get sacked. And there are managers that have made a career out of it, of, you know, make sure we get decent compensation, don't matter how we get on, ka-ching, off we go to the next one. And it happens multiple times. I'm not going to name any names, but you know, I know that it actually is a thing. You know, that severance thing is one of the most important details in a contract, above all else, and it can be worth millions. Yeah, absolutely millions. They don't need to worry about what's going to happen after that. But it certainly seems like he's got some pressure on. But maybe it's good pressure for him. Maybe it, you know, keeps him on his toes, and he hasn't got the easy street of, well, you know, when I get fired, I'm going to Barbados. So, you know, what's worse going to happen? Just put a crap team out and hope for the best. Maybe he's got that rocket up his backside to perform. Maybe no.
From a manager who's potentially under pressure at the end of the season to a manager who's constantly under pressure, Marley, Steve Bruce. It never rains, but it pours when it comes to Steve Bruce. No wins so far in the Premier League this season, already out of the League Cup. And this has landed on Steve Bruce's desk this morning. A poll from the Newcastle United Supporters Trust, 94% of the official supporters club have voted to say they want Steve Bruce to leave, either that he resigns or that Mike Ashley steps in and he sacks him. Now, based on the results so far this season, you can see that line of logic. As I say, Newcastle are yet to pick up a win, but we've been down this road so many times, hand in hand with Steve Bruce on one side and Mike Ashley on the other, and he just doesn't seem to want to push the button on Steve Bruce. This is an absolute statement from the fans. They've kind of gone through this thing of, yes, we like Steve Bruce, he's a nice guy, but ultimately he needs to go because the club is growing stale. Is this going to have any sort of an effect? The results are there to demonstrate that Steve Bruce probably should be sacked. The fans have unanimously said, please get him out. Does Mike Ashley even bother to read this? Does he do anything?
Doesn't really change anything, to be honest. His, you know, nothing could be put on Mike Ashley's desk which would even get him to open it. You know, emails can land in his inbox saying, we've lost our last 15.
A pie, maybe?
Maybe.
I think he'd open
little,
that.
A couple of extra cheap Lonsdale joggers knocking around, yeah. So, but it's another, like, the whole sort of situation is, you know, there's more than enough evidence for any manager to get sacked, with what Bruce has sort of done in his previous, you know, time at Newcastle, time over his career, his last five jobs, his last 10 jobs probably. You know, there's enough evidence there to say this guy is poor. But he's not he's not in any trouble because he simply doesn't care, Ashley. So he's got something like a 30% win record or 28-29% win record. And that is awful. That's, I think we've won 7 games in our last 36, I think, which is, you know, basically a season. So if you put that in a season table, that's 21 points. You're going down by at least 10 points if you get 21 points. You might get 5 or 6 or maybe 8 draws, but that only takes you up to 30 points, you know what I mean? So it's completely ridiculous that he's still in a job, to be honest, but that is the level of botheredness that Mike Ashley carries. He's not bothered if the team's doing bad. They're only 7 games into the season. That's how he looks at it. Once we're 30 games in and we're 5 points adrift, he'll think, God Christ, I might lose some money here in you know, club value or whatever. But as things stand, we're 2 months away from this hearing that's being fought, Newcastle versus the Premier League. And until that happens and that gets, you know, settled one way or the other, Bruce is in a job. And as soon as that gets settled, then maybe, you know, if we win, the court case is over and the takeover can potentially go through. If we lose, we're back to square one. And then by that point, if Bruce is still doing what Bruce does and lose games, and we're still in the bottom three, then he might have to think about the future of the club himself, because then he thinks, well, you know, the takeover's not happening now, so I better do something to protect the value of the club a little bit more. But again, until then, nothing will change at all. I'd bet my house on Bruce still being in a job for the next 2 months, 3 months minimum.
And Ian, you mentioned before we started recording that they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, Newcastle here, in terms of how they deal with it, because the likelihood is if Steve Bruce is removed, the alternatives are almost not worth thinking about. Big Sam's name was bandied around when we were chatting before we hit record on the podcast. And you look at the markets, Eddie Howe is actually the favourite as it stands, but then the market just springs wide open and you've got some very, very random names. Chris Wilder, Alan Shearer, Mark Hughes, and then Big Sam is not too far down that list.
Even the fact that Alan Shearer's on that list is bizarre, isn't it? Like, he's never said he wanted... Like,
yeah.
I mean, if you scroll down further, Anton Deck and Sam Fender will be in there.
Yeah. Tim Healy.
I'm looking here. Do you know what? Maybe they are. I'm going to keep scrolling, Ian. But this is a situation that Bruce and Ashley and Newcastle do need to manage. And when, you know, you are potentially having to just go through ITV's set list or you know, bribe match of the day to let Alan Shearer go, it's not a very good situation because the options are so slim, but the alternative is sticking with Bruce and being in a relegation battle for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's not been a great start to the season for Newcastle United, but I don't know. The whole point is, who do you bring in who's better than Steve Bruce?
Anyone.
Who's going to change it? Because
Nuno Santos.
Well, look, no. Look, there is one shining light out of that, and I've got to say, Chris Wilder, I think, actually, is a decent shout. Not least because I can start bringing back my vague chats of hotel nights with Chris Wilder, which has had to take a back seat this season so far. But you know, I think he might be somebody who could, you know, drill up a bit of passion. Because the thing is, you're not going to get a manager coming in, and even if they change the manager at Newcastle, you know, Christmas time, you know, shoot turkeys at Christmas and all, the famous saying, and get in time for the transfer window in January and stuff, you're not going to get a heap of money to revolutionise the squad. He's not going to get 150 million from Mike Ashley and go out and go bonkers on the transfer market. As we know, the transfer market in January is not the best one either because stuff's overinflated, panic buyers and all that. You know, I think with Chris Wilder, you might get a bit of passion drilled up with some of the players. You might get a few of them on board and get them going. Maybe that's what Steve Bruce perhaps is lacking. I'm not saying he is, because I don't know exactly what he does in his training. But if that was lacking, then that might be a consideration. Eddie Howe, I think, is more of a long ball game, isn't it? You know, he's more of a build your team over time kind of guy. I don't think he's a short-term one. But, you know, Big Sam has been there before. But that's where you're at. And it brings it around to, is that really a massive difference to what Steve Bruce is going to bring? Ultimately, it's going to be the same players on the pitch. You're looking for a manager who's going to be able to get those players going, not a manager that's going to be taking a few years to build something.
Those players are talented. It's a talented squad. It's way better than other teams down there. This is my issue with why the issue is Bruce, because he just doesn't know what to do with him.
Mm.
He doesn't, like, he's playing... I'll go back to this, I've said it before, but Miguel Almirón, he's played his entire career as a number 10, and he's never played number 10 for Newcastle. He plays centre midfield, he plays on the wing, asked to do things he's not good at. He's not given any space. He's asked to track, you know, their centre midfielders because he's worried about what they can do. He's not. He doesn't give people what they need to succeed. He's playing Saint-Maximin as a striker right now just so he can have a little bit more of the ball, but we don't get him the ball enough. It's all over the place. Everything he does, and I feel like if we can attract Eddie Howe, which I think we could, he's much more suited to the squad that we've got. And I don't even think Ashley is as big a problem as, you know, when people say, like, oh, could you attract Eddie Howe? Well, yeah, I think we could, even in the current circumstances, because I feel like people, good managers will look at that squad and say, there's talent there. I can get better out of them than Steve Bruce is doing. I can have them safe in mid-table, and then I might get backed. They probably won't get backed, but they'll think they might, so they'll come in and have a go, I reckon.
It's a shame because Newcastle is you know, such a big football city. You know, it's got the stadium right in the city centre. It's a fantastic location. They always fill it, even despite all the stuff they go through. They still get full crowds pretty much. And, you know, we want a Newcastle United that's performing in the top half of the table, because it's important for the Premier League. It's important for the North East, because they're the only Premier League team in the North East currently. And, you know, it's great to have the Newcastle that we know. They're one of the teams from the original incarnation of the Premier League, and we know those great days of, you know, Kevin Keegan and all that, losing his stuff with Big Ron in the tunnel on the telly. You know, that's the kind of stuff we want back again, and it's sort of a shadow of itself, and it's a shame. It's a shame for football, really.
Yeah, I agree. And word to the wise, given how Mike Ashley loves a business deal, I wouldn't mention shooting turkeys. Given the fact the UK could be short of turkeys at Christmas, if Mike Ashley could get away with selling turkeys, shooting them and then selling them, he probably would.
Nah, but he just hires them instead.
Turkeys direct.
Turkeys direct. There you go. There's a business model to look forward to this Christmas. Turkeys direct. Right, we're going to take another quick break. After the break, we're going to be talking about COVID-19. During the international break, it has become a hot topic once again. The Premier League has reacted with a fairly strange plan on how they plan to deal with it, as a raft of players look set to return to the UK from red list countries in the next few days. We're going to be getting stuck into all of that in just a second.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily Wednesday edition of the podcast. Right, COVID-19 has become another hot topic once again during an international break. And Marley, Jurgen Klopp is on the warpath. The Premier League have announced a bespoke plan to allow players returning from red list countries. The current situation as it stands is as so. If players have been double vaccinated and return from red list countries, they will be required to head in for a bespoke quarantine arrangement. Now, that basically means 10 days in a hotel. They can only leave the hotel for required purposes, which is training and games. So they won't miss any training, they won't miss any games, but it's 10 days away from their families, 10 days away from reality, and ultimately 10 days away from being a professional footballer. Now, the big story coming out of this from a Liverpool perspective, which has really irked Jurgen Klopp, is they're the first team to play next weekend, 12:30 kickoff against Watford. He's got four players that could potentially miss that game because of travelling back from South America and also this quarantine plan that's been put in place. He's been quite vocal on this, and he's kind of used as the spokesman because he's Jurgen Klopp and he's such a high profile manager, but he does have a point. He's called on the Premier League to protect and think about the players a bit more, because given the fact that they are going to have to be just separated from their families and their normal life for 10 days, this doesn't really seem like a realistic solution.
I don't know. The whole situation's a bit strange. Obviously, they've come up with this, like, negotiation of, like, you know, like a halfway thing between, you know, last international break, everyone was arguing with each other saying, well, we're not releasing players at all, with, you know, with the South American situation being with what it is. So this is just like a go-between sort of thing, and it's, you know, meant to keep everyone happy, but in terms of the players, you know, if I was a player, I'd be saying, well, why can't you just test me every day? I'll take a test every day before every session, and if they come back negative, you've got nothing to worry about. But the quarantining thing, for me, it's just a bit like, it's a bit pointless. If he's testing negative, why has he got to stay in a hotel? If you're Edinson Cavani or Firmino or Alisson, Edison, whoever it is, I don't really see the point in not letting them go home and be with the family, because it's a risk they take. If they're positive, then obviously they should quarantine, but if they're not, then, you know, what's the point in testing at all? I don't really get it. But, you know, I think as Klopp said something about moving the Watford game, I mean, that's...
Yeah, and that was rejected.
Yeah, I mean, that's fanciful at best. I mean, why... You know, you're never going to get a game moved on 2 weeks' notice because, you know, fans have made travel plans, they've bought the tickets, they've booked the trains. A train from Liverpool to Watford is over £100 easily. You know, you're talking £100 in petrol probably as well, and petrol's very expensive in this country right now as well with all the shortages and everything. So, yeah, that was never going to happen. Could they not have sorted this sooner? You know, everyone intended, or, you know, could clubs affected not have talked to the countries, the nations, FAs and things like that? But it's all a bit of a mess, really. It feels like they've tried to fix it from last time, but it hasn't really fixed anything, because now players are still going to miss games because of this daft quarantining thing.
Given the situation, Ian, what is the best way around this? Klopp makes quite a logical point, which is that if FAs and national health structures within certain countries, particularly relating to Brazil and Argentina, which is the primary one that affects his squad, if they can't essentially return the players, we're getting into dangerous territory of talking about players like commodities, but that is kind of how Klopp has phrased it. If they can't guarantee their safety and the fact that they won't be exposed to the potential of contracting COVID-19, then clubs should just refuse to let them go. His point is Liverpool do absolutely everything they can to ensure that at any time no player, no member of staff is potentially at risk. If that can't be replicated by a national FA, then FIFA should step in and say, well, you're not dropping the ball, but you're not carrying it as well as Liverpool are in these situations. Does he have a point? Players obviously want to go away on international duty, but should this be kind of taken out of their hands and the emotional edge removed from it, and FIFA say, no, until these criteria are met, we are potentially endangering players and the people they come in contact with?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that, obviously, I'm surprised that, considering the bubbles that players live in, I mean, generally, even before COVID, but especially now, what the risk is and how large that risk must be still considered for players coming back from these countries. And I think that the situation here is not per se COVID, but with a particular variant of COVID that has been prevalent in those countries that we don't want coming here. I think that's obviously the main thing. And, you know, you can't have two sets of rules, for one for the general public and one for footballers, because that's, you know, not fair and would be not right as well. I mean, and when COVID was kind of rampaging through Europe like a year or so ago, and they were doing the matches sort of behind closed doors, there were countries where you couldn't go, you know, so they were played in neutral venues, like, you know, Germany. You couldn't play in Germany, could you, for a while? So they were playing in Bulgaria or wherever was fine. I just wonder if FIFA should step in and say, look, like you say, if you can't guarantee the safety of these players, that they can then return back to their normal countries without having to quarantine for a huge amount of time because of a risk of a COVID variant, that your home matches as such, if you are going to be calling up European players, then you need to have them in a country that isn't under severe restrictions whichever country that is. Now, you could play it in America or wherever, but obviously I guess that still involves exporting some players from Brazil who are potentially going to be subject to those. So it's a catch-22. I don't really understand what the best solution is. I'm pretty sure that the solution is not Jurgen Klopp bringing up Watford and saying, can you move the game? It's like, hello, it's Jurgen here. Yeah, I know. Yep, absolutely. Yes, great. All the compliments of the season to you. Now, listen, can I get on to a top subject here? Our match, all my best players are not available. Yeah. Can we move game so that I can play when I've got all my best players available? No? Oh, okay, bye. Well, worth an ask. But I just don't understand what he was hoping to get from that. Of course they're going to say no. Of course they're going to say no. Can I bring all my best Brazilian players another day?
It was a long shot, wasn't it? Great impression, though.
I'm not sure it was Jurgen Klopp the Russian years.
I think we can file that one under God loves a tryer, Jurgen. Unfortunately, there's been no changes to the Premier League schedule for next weekend. Neutral venues, players being banned. This one is not going to be fixed soon. And I've got a feeling for November's international break, it is all going to start again. Right, Marley, Ian, we're going to call it there for Wednesday's edition of the Football Social Daily. Thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Thanks very much. And as ever, here at Football Social Daily, we are your one-stop shop for all things Premier League. A daily Premier League podcast. Anything from transfer gossip to biscuits, we had that on yesterday, to Sam Allardyce, to Mike Ashley Open Prize, whatever you're into, whatever you're interested in, give the subscribe button a quick click and you'll be kept right up to date. We'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.